Hi everyone. I just want to give a little shout out that Business Barn Raising is now open for the year. This time around, we are really focusing on helping people who have been interested in incorporating hypnotherapy into their practice get started. And the most important things to get started really are focusing on your practice location, getting all the systems in place that you are going to need to provide services. Those are things like insurance and contracts. And finally, finding the clients that you need to run your practice. And in Business Barn Raising, we cover all of these areas, both in lesson content format as well as supported coaching calls. So if you think this is something that might be helpful to you, be sure to reach out and get signed up. We will be starting in June. Hi, I'm Gina, your co-host of Animals and Aquatics in OT. If you are interested in the unique and special areas of animals and aquatics and occupational therapy, you're in the right place. So if this is the first time you're joining us, we're glad to have you here. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast so that way you can get our new episodes as they come out each Tuesday. If you've been with us for a while, I would love it if you would leave us a review. That can help other OTs find us as well as let us know if we're doing a good job and giving you the information that you need. We've been trying to make some changes with the podcast and make sure that we're delivering something that's actionable or useful in each episode and getting right to the point. As a professor in an occupational therapy assistant program, sometimes my lectures are at least 3 hours long, so I can ramble on a little bit. And I want to make sure that I'm being concise and useful in the podcasts. So last week, I mentioned that we're going to be starting a little bit of a mini series on mental health and horses. And we're going to continue with that this week as well. And I think for most occupational therapists, if you've been working around horses, you might have some awareness of the mental health side of working with horses. But it's usually the equine-assisted psychotherapy side of things that you may be more familiar with. And a lot of those activities are provided on the ground, and they might be more focused on using metaphor with the horses to work through some challenges that the client might be having, or it might be more of an equine-assisted learning, an EAL type of program, where it's working more on some of those self-development skills or more learning-based skills. And from this, I think sometimes for OTs, it's a little bit hard to figure out, like, well, where do we fit in? And I think that's kind of universal when it comes to OT and mental health. Because whenever our fieldwork students go out to a mental health placement, often they'll see groups being run or sessions being done, and they wonder how what an occupational therapy session would offer would be different than what a counseling session might be, or what group run by a licensed clinical social worker might be. And I think this is a really good place to start for today. So this is the journey that I want to take you on, and it's really talking about what is that niche that when we're working in mental health, that occupational therapy brings that would be different than that equine-assisted psychotherapy or equine-assisted learning approach when we're incorporating horses into our occupational therapy sessions. So now I want to give you my take on the three steps that I take when I am implementing horses into my occupational therapy sessions from a mental health framework. And the first step I think that's important as an occupational therapist is to focus on the problem that the symptoms are causing. So in a lot of mental health treatment, the focus is actually on the symptoms themselves. And for occupational therapists, our focus doesn't have to be on symptoms. We really want to look at what are the symptoms causing? What are the problems that the symptoms are causing? Are they impacting ADLs, that the client is having trouble with hygiene tasks? Are they having problems with community integration? They're not going out into the community. Are they having problems with social isolation? Is it that the child is refusing to go to school? So thinking about what are the problems that these symptoms are causing, and that's our initial take. And it's not something different than we would do with someone who has a physical disability, right? We would want to know what that physical disability encompasses, and then we would find out, well, what does that mean that impacts in your daily life? And so we're going to focus on the same thing. So if we know that a child has anxiety, we want to find out what the anxiety is preventing them from doing that they want to do. That's the most thing that's important to us, and that's going to be the family's goals. And often that's also the child's goal, right? They want to be able to get back to doing things that they were doing before they felt anxious. So we don't necessarily need to focus directly on the anxiety. We want to focus on what it is that they want to get back to doing, or what is it important for the parent that the child can do, even though they're experiencing anxiety. And in a lot of cases, anyone who has experienced anxiety knows that it doesn't often just go away. No matter what we do in occupational therapy, we may not be able to remove all of the anxiety that the person is feeling. We can give them coping skills. We can work on strategies and adaptations. We can come up with a different way of looking at it. So that would be fall under the cognitive behavioral frame of reference. And there's a lot of different ways that we can approach it. But the end goal and our focus when we're talking to families is really on that impact in daily life. So our first step, again, not so much focusing on the symptoms. It could be a variety of different symptoms that are happening. But what is it that's being impacted in daily life? Again, is that school attendance or engagement in school, staying awake and focused in school, being able to tolerate being in the classroom? There might be a lot of components that a variety of different mental health conditions or symptoms are being impacted in that school setting. So thinking about what is going on for this child and this family, and then how is that impacting their daily life? Are they not able to go to the grocery store or to a birthday party? Once we flesh that out, then we want to know what the family has tried and why they are coming to us for services. So if they've managed to find their way to us, to occupational therapy for services, we really want to know what they've done before, what they've already done. And especially if we're known for incorporating a nature-based approach, we want to know why they're specifically coming to us. Like, what have you tried? Why isn't talk therapy working? Have you been to a counselor? Have you been to a social worker? Have you been to kind of a traditional mental health setting? And if that didn't work, are they now like coming to us, right? Because there may be some underlying factors that weren't picked up or weren't addressed in that traditional mental health setting. So the most obvious one, of course, is sensory issues. So if there were some differences in sensory processing, that could be contributing to anxiety, that could be contributing to difficulties in participation in a number of different areas, that could be contributing to uncomfortable feelings from auditory processing issues. Right, there could be a lot going on from that perspective. So A, we might be bringing a bit of a different perspective, and the family may recognize that the child has some sensory differences and now they want to look into that further. We want to find out if it's that nature-based approach, whether we're in the forest doing kind of a more traditional nature-based session, or if it is the incorporating animals, like my child has always been drawn to animals, they really like animals, and I think that this will be an easier way for them to get help. Is it that the child is very resistant to talk therapy or talking with a therapist? In a lot of cases, the child might ask the question, like, what's wrong with me? Why do I have to go to a therapist, or why do I have to go to therapy? There's nothing wrong with me. I don't want to go to therapy. I don't want to go to a therapist. I'm not going to talk to this person. And so if they have tried a more traditional mental health support, that may be the result that they've gotten. And it's really important as an OT to know that going in, that they've already tried a talk therapy approach that hasn't been incredibly successful for them. And we already know that we're going to come at it from a different approach. We're going to come at it from an activities, engagement, and occupation approach. But it may guide us in which tools we might be picking out. Things like coping skills and adaptation, cognitive behavioral therapy, they're all good tools to have in our pocket. And as occupational therapists, we are trained in different methods. So thinking about which frame of reference or approach am I going to come at this with can really be tailored by knowing why. Why is the family coming to your particular practice to seek services? What do they think that your particular setting is going to bring to their family that they couldn't get at a traditional clinical setting? So thinking about why are they coming to you and filtering that through so that way you already know some things that you're probably not going to try with this particular client. If they've already said they don't do talk therapy, they don't open up to a counselor, they refuse to talk, then you already know that that's not going to be a good approach to take right away, that you're going to have to work through some other channels to build rapport, to get the child to a point where they're going to open up without even realizing that they're doing it. And certainly, some of the tools that we're going to implement are going to foster that without even thinking about it. So now we've looked at what are the areas that the symptoms are impacting in daily life. Why has this particular family chosen our practice to come to? And then the third step here is to pack our OT toolbox, right? We need to know which tools that we want to bring, how we're going to incorporate the horse for the client's benefit, right? So the horse isn't just there because we're at the stable and that's the setting we're at, right? We want to know how we're going to bring the horse into this interaction in a way that's beneficial for the client and that is going to move them towards those goals that they have. That's going to address some of the why of the parent that the parent came to us for. So we can think about if the child is struggling with sensory issues, if the child is having issues with social isolation, right? We might choose a different tract for bringing the horses into our session. So the first tract or the first tool or way that we can bring the horse into our occupational therapy session would be movement. And in a lot of cases, we can look and say, does this client need movement in order to process? Is movement going to be beneficial? And this might be something that we found out from talking to the parent. It might be something that we've observed during clinical observations during an evaluation. It might be something that we found out from a sensory profile during an evaluation, but do they need to move to start to process? Are they kind of stuck where they're at? This often works really well for clients that, again, they don't want to talk, they don't want to open up, they would rather do just about anything than talk about what they're struggling with. And the movement piece can be so beneficial, right? We're going to get them moving and the easiest way to do that is through that hippotherapy component and really grading the movement that they're receiving. And we're watching for those physiological changes. We're watching for those changes in state and alertness. We're watching for the moment when they start to open up and disclose. And we're grading that movement as we're going along. So the first tool or path that we can take is the movement tool, right? We can incorporate the movement of the horse to be therapeutic, to help that client process, to help them reach a state of regulation, to help them get ready for an activity that they're going to do that is challenging to them because of their symptoms. So, movement is one component that we might bring in. Connection is another component that the horse may be our beneficial partner in. So if the client is experiencing issues with social isolation, with bullying, with trauma, difficulties with attachment, lots of areas there, right? Connection is the component that we're really focusing on, or the pathway that we want to go down. And if I'm going to compare those two pathways for a moment, right, with movement, I might want to change the horse because I want to get a little bit of a different movement pattern to elicit a different response. But with connection, it's really about finding a horse that the client connects with, that they feel safe with. And that's always not going to be so obvious. Whereas with movement, I can look and say, okay, this is what I need from the horse as far as what movement it's going to provide. It needs to, you know, be easily graded, or it needs to have a really rhythmic and cadence walk. I need a horse that can lengthen and shorten the walk, or I need a horse that is very, very rhythmic and repetitive. And then I can kind of look at my herd and choose the horse that's going to meet that requirement. When I'm looking at connection, I'm really looking at who does the client connect with. And so even if we're going to get on the back of the horse and they're going to experience the movement, it's still the first choice is going to be, who do they connect with? And sometimes it's not as obvious as it would seem. A fearful child might choose a really tall, big horse, and you're like, ooh, okay, let's see how that's going to go. Or a child who is drawn to a horse that's maybe a bit more sensitive than you would have chosen, right? So finding out, who do they want to connect with? Who are they kind of drawn to? And then forming that partnership around that. So when we're looking at challenges around, again, isolation, trauma, bullying, attachment, those are often when I'm going to take that connection pathway. And I'm going to do a lot of activities that foster connection. So those might be incorporating more grooming activities, spending more time on the ground with the horse and kind of getting to know them. When we do mounted types of activities, the focus isn't on grading the movement, the focus is on the connection. Like, how does it feel? What do you think Blackie wants to do? What do you and Blackie want to do together? We can do some adventure-based types of storylines with that, so they can kind of be heroes together. And that connection, again, we're building that over time. And then we can explore some of the themes and areas that are challenging to that child through that connection, right? Through that connection with the horse. So in that, when we take that pathway, that's really the most important part. And our last pathway that we can take is action. And can the client help around the barn, help around the stable to get into action? And sometimes we really need that movement from the client, the action, the ability to do something or have an effect on the environment to really change something. And this makes me think back to a really recent study, and I will link in the show notes here to the article. So it's an article in the Washington Post from this year that stated that exercise as a treatment for severe depression is at least as effective as standard drugs or psychotherapy, and by some measures better, according to the largest study to date of exercise as medicine for depression. And so if you think about being at the stable and mucking stalls, throwing hay, cleaning the barn, walking horses, right? There's a lot of movement exercise component to it. And if we need clients to be able to take action, they're sort of stuck where they're at. They can't make a decision. They are experiencing feelings of depression. They are really struggling to feel empowered in their daily life. And so that's impacting their ability to engage, go out in the community, go to school. Action is the third pathway that, as an occupational therapist, I recommend. It's very task-based. So, I mean, it's very occupational in a lot of ways, right? In that we want them to engage in a task. The task is motivating and important in the environment, right? It's something that usually has to be done. We don't really need to contrive scenarios. There's plenty of work to do at any farm. And it's purposeful. There's meaning behind it. And sometimes it's just getting started and getting moving and being able to turn around and look at a stall that's like clean and freshly fluffed, if it's straw, and be like, wow, I did that. This horse is going to have a really nice bed for tonight. That Like I feel accomplished. And so, you know, something that can be so routine for us as horse people can be really meaningful for clients. And again, just thinking about using cleaning stall as an example, if you've ever been to the barn on a quiet morning or late evening and you're in there and you're cleaning the stall, there is something so meditative and therapeutic about it. And the sense of accomplishment when you've completed it, there really, it triggers a beneficial feedback loop in that we have accomplished something. We've done something. It's meaningful. It's meaningful to somebody outside of ourselves, and it's purposeful. So in our action category, we have tasks that are meaningful and are purposeful. And with those, that can really help our client get unstuck. It can help them move forward. It can help them start to take action in their own lives. So to start to wrap up for today, my focus as an occupational therapist, when I'm focused on mental health and I'm incorporating horses, would be to focus on the problems that the symptoms cause, to review why the family has chosen my private practice in particular, what they've already tried that maybe didn't work, and then to choose what pathway I want to take when I'm partnering with the horse. Do I want to take a movement pathway? Do I want to take a connection pathway? Or do I want to take an action pathway? I hope this was helpful for you today. If you have any questions, always reach out to us. We love to hear from our listeners and our viewers and find out what you're thinking about horses, occupational therapy, and mental health. Thanks for listening.